Yo, yo, Nina.
Oh, Devine. Yeah. Freedom Fiends live right after the onion bit. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing good. I'm huffing some jankum and reading about tyranny.
Nice. Well, for those who want to... Not huffing jankum, no. I haven't got that far along in my depravity today.
You sniffing
maybe
paint,
a little bit later.
Sniffing paint and shooting dynamite.
Working my way up to it, Michael. Baby steps, right?
Yeah. All other
if you want to call and tell us about your jankum-induced hallucinations, just dial 307-215-5171. Freedom Fiends.
Baby. Heroin needs to be illegal because it's a gateway drug to jankum.
For those who don't know, why don't you enlighten folks on what jankum is?
Jankum was an internet scam. It was some kid made it up. He said that he was huffing fermented poo and getting high, and he posted pictures that were really like chocolate milk or something. And some sheriff in the South somewhere found it and thought it was real and issued this press release that said that school kids all across America are huffing jankum and we need to outlaw this, and you should sniff your children's breath when they come home to see if it smells like poo.
Yeah, I think it would stink up the whole room. I think any parent would know if that were true. Didn't the city council in that little town or whatever have a little something to say about it too?
Yeah, they outlawed huffing fermented organic material or something like that.
Wow. Yeah.
So I got some organic material here. What does that sound like?
Sounds like silver.
It's silver. We got a donation from Sean. I want to thank Sean for sending a donation. He sent some silver coins here from back when American money was worth something because it was made of something. He sent us a couple half-dollar pieces and a couple old cool four cool old mercury dimes. And then I kind of got caught gold fever, and I went out and bought a roll of old Roosevelt dimes. It's kind of ironic that Roosevelt's on there.
It's pretty ironic.
They're worth money. I call them Ruse, though. That's what people
in Indiana. Which Roosevelt? Ruse. Franklin or Theodore?
I don't know. Whoever's on the dime now, it's the same design, but they were made of silver up to the day I was born, 1964.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all your fault, Michael.
I think it's Eleanor.
No, yeah. Ironic because Franklin Delano Roosevelt obviously confiscated people's precious metals, gold, and made owning it or hoarding it, as they would say, illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of freedom.
Nixon took us totally off the money, took money off the metallic standard. Nixon was horrible, man. Nixon took us off the money standard.
The gold window.
Invented the ERA, the DEA, and the EPA, the DEA, and the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, which leftists would say, well, that was good, but no, it's not because it – doesn't make people equal. It makes them – some are more equal than others and just makes a bunch more laws and screws people.
Right, right. It just weasels the government's nose into the tent where they can control what the freedom of association is or, I guess, prevent real freedom of association.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's hard to think about that. But, yeah, Nixon actually started a lot of the whole mess of having the alphabet soups on. The DEA? I don't think I'd ever heard that before, but, I believe it.
Yep.
Disgusting.
So let's see what else happened in the news. Although I do want to say I've been on this tear philosophically for the past day.
I noticed
I don't want to talk about the government anymore because the government's just a symptom, man. It's a basic – the thing we should be talking about – and we'll still talk about the government because it's fun. But the thing we should be talking about is the basic symptom of what's wrong with some humans that they have a need to control. It's fucked up. Oops.
Well, you could also take it from the angle that what's really wrong, what enables the controllers, is the people who obey, those who allow themselves to be controlled, the horizontal enforcers. But not only that, the people that just decide that they should be controlled. As you wrote that article, what was it? There's three kinds of people: those who want to control, those who want to be controlled, and good people.
Yeah. Yeah, which basically expands on an idea from this book called Political Ponderology, which I think I'm going to find the author of and interview him on the Gumbo. You know, it's basically the idea that like something like 6% of all people are sociopaths and like 15% of all people want to obey sociopaths. And, you know, altogether, that's about 21%, which is nowhere near a majority, but it allows the rest of the people to be controlled.
I don't know. I think it's probably a higher percentage of people who want to be controlled. Because really, if 60% of us didn't want to be controlled or could even understand the idea that we were being controlled, then do you think we'd have the kind of society we live in today?
I don't know, man. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with education, because think about how many people we know, including ourselves, who used to buy the state line and then read something, you know?
Yeah, read something, picked up a book.
Yep.
Or just thought about something, stopped watching TV. There's a good exercise. I think you should keep your TV off or unplug your cable box for a month and see how you feel. Maybe we're preaching to the choir because the fiends are already, you know, pretty good if they're giving us donations in silver now instead of Federal Reserve notes.
I like it. I like it. And if someone wants to do more of that, give us some metal, they can contact me. I'll give them my P.O. box address. I don't really like to give it out because I remember when I was going to college, my roommate gave out his P.O. box on the college radio station, and someone sent him weed, and he got busted. So I don't want to give it out randomly to people I haven't talked to. But you know, if you're a fiend, and I know you're a good person, and aren't going to try to get me in trouble,
He got busted. You can get busted if somebody sends something illegal to your mailbox, even if you had no provable, even if they can't prove that you had knowledge they were sending it to you.
Yeah, I mean, well, he took it home. And then they kicked in his door because they'd opened it and found it and then rewrapped it and let it be delivered. But I don't know. I guess you gotta open your mail at the P.O. box, and if there's anything that shouldn't be sent to you, just throw it away.
Yeah, although then I'm sure that's a crime. Because honestly, I'd probably be pretty stoked if I got a free sack in my mailbox. I'd be like, I guess I should be wary before I would be stoked and just toss it or something.
Yeah, they run drug dogs through shipping. Depots for the post office.
Yeah, the post office. Do you think they have any control over UPS and FedEx as far as that kind of stuff?
They do now that somebody, well, who knows if it was a false flag or not, but you remember a couple years ago someone tried to like ship a bomb in printer cartridges via UPS.
So there's probably some kind of waypoint or stop check.
I assume that everything I read is a false flag. You know, I read like the mayor of some city somewhere the other day, like his neighbor's house was on fire and he rushed in and like saved the guy's life. And I'm thinking like, who knows? Maybe they burned that house down so he could do that for press.
Set that up for his reelection campaign.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe, I'm not saying that's what happened, but you know, I just assume things like that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Always believe the opposite of what the government tells you.
Well, because
the government-owned media tells you.
Doesn't, you know, anything they provide that's a service, you know, an actual service like picking up your trash would be done better without the government and more efficiently. And most of what they do is an anti-service. Most of what they do is hurting people, you know?
Yeah. Well, because they're there no matter what. They're not dependent on the market demand. So you'll have a fire department, police station in every town, every municipality. And, you know, there's no market forces. If there's no fires in a year, that doesn't mean the fire department's going to go away. And all those firemen on the government fireman place, they're still going to draw the same amount of salary.
Yeah.
Even though they did zero work.
I was reading about the Liberty Dollar the other day, and it was really pissing me off. Do you know about that?
This guy. Yeah, Bernard von Knothaus.
Knothaus.
Yeah. Knothaus.
Yeah. Was making these silver and gold coins. There were, you know, basically just silver and gold. I mean, one of them had Ron Paul on them, which is probably why they went after him. you know, I guess the mistake he made was putting the words $1 on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then that was the Fed's attack on him, or the prosecution's attack, was that he was counterfeiting.
Yeah.
Is what they said.
Well, The prosecutor, the attorney appointed by Obama, who led him to be thrown in prison and have them steal $7 worth of gold and silver from him and keep it, she said he was a domestic terrorist.
Just $7? I thought it was a lot more than seven.
$7 million.
There we go.
She said that he was a domestic terrorist. That's what pissed me off more than anything. Like, you know, the government is printing this fake money that's paper, and this guy's making something that's actually worth something, and he gets arrested, robbed, and called a domestic terrorist for it.
Yeah, for who's the real terrorist?
For competition.
Who's the real terrorist? I think we all know the answer. Yeah, exactly. They didn't want him raining on their parade. And his money was actually real money.
Yeah. It was worth something.
Well, I guess we got to go to this break. But fiends, call us, please. Tell us some stuff.
Yeah, call us if you want.
Call us if you want. Yeah, we're not going to force you.
We're not going to thank you. before we put politicians' heads on money.
So people were wondering where you're going to go with put politicians' heads. You meant on money.
This is the Freedom Fiends live show. If you want to call in, the number is 307-215-5171 or Skype to username kittyfeet1, and that's kittyfeet.com. So, do you hear my interview with Jody Emery there, Nima?
No, I want to, though. You were telling me about it when it was upcoming, and it sounded like it's going to be really interesting. I'm definitely really looking forward to it.
It is.
And now, go ahead and explain to our listeners who she is.
She's the wife of Mark Emery, who's a political prisoner. I mean, it's kind of interviewing Jody Emery is interviewing her, but it's also kind of a proxy interview with Mark because she knows everything about him and, you know, mm-hmm. he's in prison and can't do interviews. So, you know, a lot of it was about him. Mark Emery is a Canadian who is in an American prison serving a bunch of years in prison, basically for free speech, but ostensibly for selling marijuana seeds. He was kind of the Johnny Appleseed of high quality pot strains. I mean, a lot of the dispensaries in America, the strains that they're selling came from seeds that Mark sold years ago from Canada.
Oh, wow.
And he sold, he was making like, I think it was $3 million a year for many years, illegally, you know, like breaking the law in Canada, but Canada didn't care. He was paying his taxes. He had a business license. He was above boards, had a physical location shop, and was selling seeds all over the world by mail. And the America got Canada to bust him and send him to America. And they agreed. Oh, there's actually, there are DEA offices in Canada. Canada and America are kind of the same country when it comes to the drug war. There's no borders with them. And
that's so horrible.
Yeah. But he's a hero, man. And he took the most of the money that he was making and put it into marijuana legalization efforts in Canada and in like Colorado and all over America too, you know?
Right. So right. Where he saw weak points.
Yeah. So he just kept enough to live on and, you know, put all of his profits into the cause.
And they threw him in a cage.
Yeah.
Like an animal.
Yep. It really.
So, and his wife has continued the fight after that, though. They're not going out without a fight, right?
No. No. She does a weekly show on YouTube where she talks about him and like reads letters from him and talks about what he's up to and talks about what he's doing. And, you know, she's kind of his link to the outside world, which I think is really cool for a wife to do.
Oh, totally cool. Yeah. Yep. That's respect. Yeah. But he's probably the kind of drug dealer that, you know, Bill O'Reilly, when he says he wants to execute drug dealers, I think Bill O'Reilly is thinking of more than just the people on the block pushing drugs. I think he's thinking people like this who actually want to change society and give us more freedom.
Yeah.
You know, who have a loud vocal presence in a freedom movement that basically says you own your body, you own what you grow in your house or on your property. I mean, the guy was the OG of Kush.
Worms. Worms. Did you know that rich, fertile farmland can have up to 1.7 million earthworms per acre, meaning that the weight of the worms beneath a farmer's soil can be greater than that of the livestock upon its surface?
Nice. You were actually able to tie worms to something. I love it. Worms. But that kind of defeats the whole purpose of worms, though, doesn't it?
Well, I've been saying le vire now. Le vire is French.
It was no longer a non sequitur.
Le vire is French for worms. Yes.
Worms.
The
okay.
worms.
The worms.
Well, so right. The DNC's head lobbyist, Hillary Rosen, who's taken a lot of flack this week because she said something about Romney's wife never worked a day in her life or something like that. The bigger issue with Hillary Rosen to me is that she worked to help outlaw Napster. She was the lobbyist for the RIAA. She's responsible. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It says it says it right here on the Wikipedia posting. Lobbyist for the recording industry. Yikes. Yeah, I'd rather have I'd rather know a person who never worked a day in their life than know somebody who's worked for evil like that.
I know. I mean, I said it before when I said that people on welfare are more ethical than cops because cops are taking government money to harm people, whereas people on welfare are taking government money and just sitting on their ass.
Right.
Or raising their kids, you know.
Yeah, they just get a check. They don't actively go out and steal the money. I mean, who's the people that are really stealing the money? That's who we got to be wary of.
Yeah, I'm really feeling this push to like push us away from just bitching about the government. I think right now you're resistant to it, but I think in 5 episodes you're going to be fired up about it, and just all you're going to want to talk about is what's wrong with humans.
No, I think you're right. It's like rational. It's rational anarchism. It's individualism. I mean, if we take away all we talk about is, you know, the state, and horizontal enforcement. But the way you take that away is you stop buying into the collective hallucination, as you called it. You know, if we stop talking in those terms that, hey, they're the government and they're doing everything wrong. No, it's people who are using this fantasy called the state as an excuse to do immoral things.
I came up with it basically by like channel flipping on talk radio. And I was listening to like Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh on one channel. And then like, what's her name? The lesbian.
Maddow?
Yeah. Yep.
The Maddow. See, that's how good I said Maddow before you said lesbian. So yeah. You can't call me a bigot.
Yeah. Hillary Rosen's a lesbian too, isn't she? And definitely, I don't know if she is or not, but you know who's definitely a lesbian?
Would that be on her wiki page? Is there a sexual orientation maybe. Section?
But you know who's
wiki
a lesbian?
Now?
And this is neither here nor there, but it plays into like the federal attorney who prosecuted the guy for the Liberty Dollar is a lesbian. The only reason I mention it, I think it plays into the idea of like the left versus right, like, you know, people will go, well, I'm a lesbian. I'm going to go fight for the Democrats and the liberals and get appointed by Obama because he doesn't care that I'm, you know, it's the Republicans' fault is what I'm saying. It's the when a lesbian oppresses you with the law, it's the Republicans' fault.
There you go. Okay.
You know,
okay.
If the Republicans,
I thought we were going to talk about people.
If the Republicans had repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, if Bush, you know, had repealed that and then legalized pot, they could be in power for 100 years. So there.
Yeah. No, I totally see what you're saying. And the fact that each party, it's not just the Republicans, each party likes to divide us into these groups and then pit us against each other. So because the gay community is always being attacked by certain people in the Republican Party, they feel like they have to, you know, fight on the sides of the Democrats. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's like 99% of the people I knew in San Francisco have disowned me because I'm stumping for Ron, because I was like, hey, Ron Paul's a good guy. You should vote for him. Because they're like, ooh, you're a Republican. That means you hate gay people and want, you know, abortion to be illegal. I'm like, not really, you know, not really. Ron Paul's a good philosopher. You should check him out. No, you're horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes
you're
that
horrible.
Fate, you know, really the only divide is authoritarian versus libertarian. And the word libertarian is an antonym to the word authoritarian. And I got an argument with a liberal friend of mine who was saying, like, you can't define something by its opposite. I'm like, well, you can.
That's,
when the word was invented as an antonym to the other word. The word libertarian is a word created to mean the opposite of authoritarian.
Not only that, but I think opposites are a really important way to define something. I mean,
yeah,
how would they not be?
We did a whole cast on this, I think, on the value of labels and the limits of labels at one point. So if you want to call in, it's 307-215-5171. Worms. Worms. Worms.
Worms.
Worms.
No, you say worms and then I say worms.
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 Worms, 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 worms. I think there's a little delay between us back and forth here, so it's not
SurvivalGearBags.com is run by someone who believes
by fake money or conversely pro-real money, a threat to them, and they've said as such. So
which
a guy
back-
that's actually enabling people to spend or buy the kind of currency they want is a terrorist in their eyes. I can totally see that.
Which is kind of the ultimate form of keeping your monopoly, you know.
What, labeling people who would be in competition with you as
terrorists,
evil, scapegoating them, labeling them as terrorists. Yeah.
I mean, that's so beyond what the mafia does. You know, the mafia will like kill somebody, but the government will kill everybody and throw them in prison and label them a terrorist and make people hate them even after they're dead, you know, and ruin their families. You know, the mafia historically never goes after the family. So there.
Ruin their whole lives and the lives of people around them. I think it was Ron Paul was speaking at a recent speech, and I've heard all the statistics, not all the statistics, obviously, but I've heard a few pretty horrible statistics about the amount of prison population here in America. But this one kind of really hit home. He was saying, you know, America has about 5% of the world's people, the world's population, but we've got 25% of the world's prisoners.
Yeah.
A quarter. One in four of the people in prison on this planet are in an American prison.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, people will complain about North Korea, who are horrible and worse than – it's worse to live there than in America. But a complaint I hear a lot is, you know, if you can, if you speak out against the government there, they will not only throw you in prison, they'll throw your family in prison, even if they don't have anything to do with it. They kind of do that here too, though. You know, they'll throw the breadwinner in prison for a nonviolent offense, and the family has to go on welfare, and the family's ostracized, and – it's just a softer.
How often will they take the kids away too? Really, that's taking your family away. Yep. When they throw you in jail because you had meth possession charge and they steal your kids, that literally is throwing your kids. You know, that's forcing them into a situation they don't want to be in. Their kids, they don't have any control over it. All they know is their daddy has been thrown in a cage, and then they're being forced to live with people they don't know.
So, getting back to why I hate bitching about the government now. I don't know.
Well, see, like, we were bitching about the people that do those horrible things.
I know. There you go. I just – this light bulb went off in my head the other day while I was watching, you know, channel flipping between Rachel Maddow, Hannity, and like LRN.FM, you know, where we're syndicated. and this – I swear this is going to influence at least everything I say, if not everything we say, in the Freedom Fiends going forth from here on in. And I think it's going to make us – we're going to lose some people over this, but it's going to make us very different from all the other casts, because I really want to get to more about the people thing. I think Bad Quaker does it pretty well on without even thinking about it. He talks a lot about the people being the problem. But the thing was, like, I'm listening to Rachel Maddow, and she's just complaining left and right about corporations and Republicans. Then I listen to Hannity. He's complaining about Democrats, Muslims, and Occupy Wall Street. And, you know, all the libertarians, us included, complain about the statists and the government. And doing that is kind of lumping people into a single thing. It's almost a form of racism. You know, it's saying like, well, if you're a Democrat, you're like this and I can dismiss you.
Or if you're it's buying into the collectivist mindset. Yeah. When we're supposed to be the different ones, we're supposed to be the individualists. But even as I say that sentence, I'm doing it because I'm saying we are as a group.
I know.
So I think you're right. When
well, talk about you and I.
You and I should start to talk more about the individual, what happened in a certain situation, why it was immoral. If we can get around that, do an end run around this whole thought process and this whole internal dialogue or monologue we all have with ourselves to where each person is put in a group, then maybe that's part of the paradigm shift. Maybe that's part of the paradigm that we need to change.
Yeah. Although
you and I need to help
change. The closest thing I've gotten to a solution so far is that article I wrote of there's only three kinds of people in the world, which basically puts people in groups. But the groups are, you know, basically, I mean, to me, it comes down to people that obey the non-aggression principle and people that don't, which I think is a valid I think my grouping of people is valid because it really does, you know, it says who's ethical and who isn't.
And the non-aggression principle is a really important tool for that too, because it removes any kind of excuse or any kind of focusing on the person or the individual or their history. All it does is focus on a specific action. Was this person an aggressor in the situation? Did they attack you? Did they steal from you? Did they rape you? Did they defraud you? Is the action immoral instead of is this group of people wrong in their philosophy and do we need to argue with them for it?
Define the non-aggression principle for anyone who's listening who doesn't know it. I can't imagine there would be if they're listening on LRN.FM, but there might be. I mean, we're on a couple of radio stations. Somebody might be driving by, channel flipping where one of those stations is and doesn't know what that means. Go ahead and explain that.
The non-aggression principle, at least the way I read it, is just the idea or the concept that the root of immorality comes from you aggressing on somebody else or their property. And so ideally, you can boil everything down to that. You know, I shouldn't do anything that aggresses upon you. If I do, then I am in the wrong. And that action is immoral. Does it matter what costume I'm wearing? Does it matter what my title is? Does it matter how much money I have? If I take from you, I'm aggressing against your property. If I hit you, I'm aggressing against your property because you own yourself. You own your body that I hit. So basically, it just boils everything down to the golden rule. Well, not more than the golden rule, but don't hurt somebody because you don't want to be hurt yourself.
And I think that a lot of libertarians, here I go again, labels. It is basically the only rule to live on. I mean, I take the Richard Marbury thing of the only two rules to live on are the non-aggression principle and keep your word. I mean, you can live by the non-aggression principle and not keep your word, but you're not someone I'm going to want to have anything to do with. You know, I don't want someone to say, yeah, I'll be there at 4:00 and then I'm sitting there twiddling my thumbs and they don't show up. I'm not going to have much to do with someone who does that repeatedly. But
well, how do you categorize fraud then? Because I lean back and forth on it, but I think you can categorize fraud as an aggression because you're causing somebody to part with their money in a way that they wouldn't have parted with it under a voluntary circumstance. Okay. So if I lie to you and tell you that, you know, here's a gold piece and then you buy it, you spend your $2,000 on it or whatever, and you get home and test it and, you know, it's just tin painted gold, then I've taken your money under false pretenses. I've aggressed against you. I've basically stolen from you.
I think so too. Where would you draw the line though? Is someone who is habitually hours late committing fraud?
It depends on the situation. I guess if they're getting paid for it and they're – see, but in that situation, the employers would be aware of it. I mean, they're the ones –
Not they, employers. They just people that, you know, like if your buddy always says – if your buddy says, meet me at the bar at 8:00 and he doesn't show up till 10:00 half the time, you know, is that fraud? See, what I'm – I guess what I'm getting at is I think that the non-aggression principle is the only rule in life for whether or not someone – is ethical, but it's not the only rule for whether or not I'll deal with them. For instance, I'm fond of blocking people on Facebook when they say, "Well, fuck you. This your libertarian beliefs are horrible and everybody should have free healthcare." You know, they haven't really aggressed on me. They are by what they're talking about, by voting in people who will aggress by proxy, but they're not aggressing on me by calling me a doo-doo head. But I don't want someone around. I'm not going to sit and listen to someone over and over who calls me a doo-doo head, so I block them.
Important point. But the way I would deal with that is freedom of association does not violate the non-aggression principle. So you choosing not to deal with somebody doesn't mean that you're aggressing against them. You own your body and by essence and where you're at any particular point in time and what you devote your time and your efforts towards. So if you decide not to devote your time and efforts to somebody who's, you know, habitually late, there's nothing wrong with that.
Cool. We have a caller. I'm going to keep him on hold here through the break. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Worms. Fiends. This is a song called Would You Tar and Feather a Tax Collector playing in the background.
I'm really feeling like it today, man.
Yeah, but you don't mean that because you're a peaceful guy. Oh, it is the 15th. Yeah. Huh? Don't you have to the 17th?
16th. I got to do mine tonight.
I'm going to the dentist on the 17th, which is kind of like going to the... Hey, who's the caller?
Would you like going to the pain monster.
Advertise your product or service.
Live show, and Jeff had a few things he wanted to share with us. Go ahead with the first one off the top of the list.
Oh yeah, well, basically, I wanted to emphasize, you know, what you said about the whole non-aggression principle. It's, you know, Ron Paul pretty much summed it up, you know, in the golden rule of doing unto others as you'd have them do unto you out of the Bible. That pretty much sums up the non-aggression principle right there. And I think I don't see how anybody would have any problem with that, but just
I totally agree. Yeah, I think the golden rule sums it up as very well. Although I seem to recall when Ron Paul had brought that up in regards to foreign policy at one of the Republican debates, it might have even been in South Carolina. Now that I'm thinking about it, they booed Ron Paul. They booed the golden rule.
Yeah.
So I think we've got a long way to go, and it's really hard to say that there are actually – we live in a society where people will boo the golden rule.
Where a room full of Christian conservatives will boo the golden rule.
Well, yeah, the thing is they're whipped into a frenzy over outside boogeymen, you know, which is – you know, the so-called right, you know, uses the whole – national security and fear of the boogeyman on the outside, while the so-called left uses economic fears, you know, for its constituents. So, you know, it's part of how they keep us divided, and which you mentioned, you know, the whole group division thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's also part of how they keep us thinking there's actually a need for them. I mean, if unless we're scared out of our wits, then why else would we need some kind of all-powerful state to protect us? So they like to push that fear so they can justify their own existence and their own theft of our money.
The thing I find ironic is when I was a kid, the boogeyman was the communists. And then the CIA trained a bunch of Afghanistans to go in and Afghanis to go in and fight the communist threat, and the communist threat kind of dissipated on its own over time, and then we were left with the some of those Afghanis ended up wanting to kill us. It's there's a term for that. What is it? The mongoose problem, you know, where you bring in mongooses to eat the rats, and then they end up more of a problem than the rats were. And there are people over there. There are a few scary brown people that want to kill us, but they are by far the minority. And a lot of the reason they want to kill us is because we're sending our government is sending people over there to blow up their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I remember the communist threat as well. But I don't know if you've ever read Gary Allen and Larry Abraham. Did you ever read their book?
No.
Oh, okay. None Dare Call It Conspiracy. It talks about how basically big moneyed interests basically helped support the Bolshevik Revolution. In other words, they sort of helped create the boogeyman, you know, for their own interests. And that goes to another point I wanted to mention, by the way, about big money and all that and the Federal Reserve. You know, this is the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic.
Yeah.
And, here's an interesting connection with the Federal Reserve, which I know you both, as do I, both are vehemently against.
Yes.
Three people who stridently opposed J.P. Morgan and John D. Rockefeller's planning stages, which had been going on since 1910, included three men named Isidore Strauss, Benjamin Guggenheim, who has that museum in New York named after him, and John Jacob Astor IV. You know, they were of the richest men in the world. They opposed the Federal Reserve, and all three of them went down to their deaths on the Titanic, conveniently for the Federal Reserve planners.
So do you think maybe someone sunk it? Do you think it was sunk intentionally to get rid of those guys?
That's a theory. But, you know, I mean, I can't prove it, but there are websites out there like The Untold Truth Behind the Sinking of the Titanic.
Wow.
It's, you know, let's see. Yeah, The Untold Truth Behind the Sinking of the Titanic. And it's an interesting theory, but again, you know, take it for what you think it's worth.
Wow. Do you ever listen to the band Dead Kennedys or hear any spoken word stuff by their singer, Jello Biafra?
I had heard of them, but I remember them.
You sound like him. You sound like him. That's why I'm asking. You're not.
I sound like who?
Jello. You're not him calling in, are you?
No, I'm not Jello Biafra.
Okay. So you want to
remember the name that Dead Kennedys mentioned back in the 80s. I knew a punk rocker who was into that band, but I never really listened much to them.
They're good. They taught me to distrust the government, actually, even though they were kind of left anarchists or left whatever. Them and Abbie Hoffman were my start, and then I read and became an anarcho-capitalist. But so you want to move to Wyoming? Talk about Wyoming. I'm in Wyoming. I like Wyoming.
Well, I'm considering it, you know, because, you know, I've been to Weston County a couple times.
Did you meet Mama Liberty?
I'm sorry?
Did you meet our friend Mama Liberty?
Oh, yeah. And I think cool. I met you at the Jamboree last summer.
Oh, yeah. I was there with my wife. Yeah.
Yeah, you're Michael, not Mike?
Yeah. And what was your name?
Yeah, I'm Knight Rider.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember you.
Yeah. Yeah, basically I'm considering Weston County. I know most of the forum people, they're in either Weston or Crook. But, you know, I mean, I've heard good things about the sheriff there. He's a la Richard Mack. So yeah. That's part of the reason why I'm gravitating toward that particular neck of the woods. But I'm not 100% on it, though. I mean, I've been perusing, you know, real estate and job prospects. I know the oil industry is big.
Well, I don't know. It's all kind of the happening place is South Dakota now. I mean, if you want to work on
North Dakota.
Yep. Yeah. There's not that much work for people out. You know, it used to be you could come out of state and just step off the bus and get a job working on a rig here. That's not the case now. To get a job in the oil industry here now, for the most part, it's like skilled work with computer testing and things like that. The people that are just getting jobs hired out of anywhere for working on a rig is mostly in the Dakotas right now, but it moves around.
I know there. Well, in fact, there's one site up in North Dakota. The name escapes me, but yeah, all you have to, if you can, if you have a heartbeat, they'll hire you.
I think it's the Bakken oil shale, not Bakken, Bakken. Something like that.
It's, I read an article about it the other day. It sounded like what liberals think a libertarian paradise would be. It's like there's prostitutes everywhere and the air quality is really bad.
Yeah, it's the Bakken oil shale. It's basically they dig down and then they dig horizontally to extract the oil out of dirt that has a bunch of oil in it.
Yeah, but the town, though, what I've heard about it, I can't remember the name of the town, but it has the second busiest McDonald's on Earth. The first busiest is in Beijing.
In Beijing.
Wow.
Yeah, but their McDonald's is the second busiest on Earth. And the name, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember the name of the town in North Dakota. But, yeah, I have a half-brother who's been doing work there, basically – installing, working on, he's sort of a geology type. What he does is he helps install toilets and plumbing. And, you know, he's been working on, you know, setting up that kind of infrastructure around the rigs.
So can I ask you, what about Wyoming appeals to you?
Well, the firearms culture, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, it, you know, at least in the northeast part of the state, you won't get stopped by the police for having a pistol on your side in the open.
You won't get stopped by the police for that where I live in Casper either. It's not as common, and people kind of look at you funny. But Wyoming is probably the state where you're the least likely to get thrown to the ground by police for open carrying a gun. But I'll tell you, too, other than a couple people that I know, everybody who moves here to open carry, after about a year, they go, why am I doing this? And they just stick it in their pocket or conceal carry it. I did, which is really about, you know, I mean, the first 6 months I was here, I couldn't get a permit, so I open carried. And then even after I got a permit, I still open carried once in a while just to kind of make a point. And then they legalized concealed carry without a permit here. I almost never open carry anymore just because it attracts so much attention. You have to have more situational awareness, which I think actually makes it a little more, I don't know if dangerous is the word, but it makes it harder to open carry. Anyway, that's
makes it annoying.
Yeah, that's our break. And we're going into a break here. Thanks for calling, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yep. Is he still there?
I think he hung up.
Worms.
What if the key to achieving liberty now?
So we're back there, Nima Vidotti.
We sure are, Michael W. Dean.
Freedom Fiends Live.
Michael, not Mike, as the other listener said.
Yeah, that's my username on the Free State Wyoming forum, which, you know.
You get really bugged when people call you Mike, even when I do it. Which I've learned not to do.
Which is funny because my username on there is Michael Not Mike, and people have still called me Mike.
Is it just to ruffle your feathers or what?
No. Like, people just think that if your name's Michael, once they've exchanged four words with you, they can call you Mike. And I've never liked the name Mike, so I had the username Michael Not Mike so people would know not to call me Mike. And people, I guess, just don't even see the username. They just call me Mike.
Why do you not like being called Mike? I've probably asked you this before, but tell it to us, the public.
Because I had a cousin that I didn't really like, and he was Mike. You know, they called him Mike and me Michael to keep us apart, to like be able to tell us apart. And I was smarter than him, and so I always thought Mike was a dumb guy. The way I explain it is when people make the mistake of calling me Mike is I say, well, it's Michael.
That's not my name.
I said, no, yeah. I say Michael is the angel that threw Lucifer out of heaven, and Mike is the guy that pumps your oil at the gas station.
Okay, fair enough.
So I forgot to mention why I think Lady Heather on CSI is based on my friend Mistress Ilsa, Ilsa Strix. Is Lady Heather was created by writer Jerry Stahl, who's also in my Selby movie. Jerry is friends with Lydia Lunch, who's in my DIY or Die movie, and friends with Richard Kern and that whole like New York City, Los Angeles, upscale downtown art crowd that Ilsa ran with. So I figure, you know,
is this like a 6 degrees of separation from Michael Dean thing?
No, it's like 1 degree of separation from me and 1 degree of separation between these people. So it's like, you know, if Jerry was going right. to write, was going to write this like super dumb A, I mean, he had to know her. Although I think in Hollywood, you can like, you know, you could go to a house of ill repute and then write it off on your taxes probably. So as research.
Right. And expense it to your company as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
Not saying he did that. So you want to give out the number, the live studio number for people to call in?
Yeah, I sure do. We should be doing that a little bit more often here. Okay. So Freedom Fiends Live. If you want to call and chat, dial 307-215-5171. We can talk about anything you want. Although right now we're on a kick where we'd rather talk about people themselves instead of the government. Hey, we got a call now.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. What's your name?
Hello, this is Miles Heifel again.
Hey, Miles.
How you doing, Miles?
Oh, doing good enough. Calling from the land of corruption, a.k.a. Reno, Nevada.
Why is Reno more corrupt than anywhere else? What makes you better, man? What makes you better?
Because they're so proud of it. I mean, I've never seen a place more proud of its corruption than here. And I've lived in some corrupt places.
Is this Miles that I was arguing about drones with on the internet the other day?
Yeah, you said I took things too seriously.
I sure did, man. I was kind of making a joke, but kind of being serious. I said this thing about how I think that the first time the United States government drones an American in America, they're going to lie and say the guy was building dynamite in his bombs in his garage and that's what blew him up. Because I was thinking about, like, if they drone someone at 4 a.m. in America in a rural area, who would know? You know, nobody'd see the thing fall except cows. And maybe somebody'd say they heard a whistling sound before it happened, but they'd probably bring in experts who say, yes, dynamite often whistles before it blows up. And you took me to task for it. I'm like, dude, lighten up. I mean, I think I am as likely to win the lottery as I am to get droned, and I don't even play the lottery. You know, we're kind of making a point. So there.
Well, I believe it's Miles' turn to respond. Mr. Miles, yes. What do you have to say to that?
Well, a simple fact that how often do you think they could get away with that?
Once.
I mean, it's a very unsubtle way to bump people off and very expensive as
well. Yeah, but I think the first time they do it.
How big of a leap is it? Because in places like Pakistan, and Pakistan has even called for the American government to stop. Technically, Pakistan still considers us droning in their territory illegal, and yet we still do it there. And it's a big way to rile people up. Everybody hates it. Innocent people die. So how big of a leap is it then, really, to go from droning people on one geographic location on the map to droning people in another geographic location on a map?
And before you answer that, Miles, I think that when they do it the first time, it's going to be somebody heinous. It's going to be a kiddie raper, or it's going to be someone who's not necessarily heinous but looks heinous to their neighbors, like some, you know, loner with too many guns who lives in the hills who, you know, has like been filmed or, you know, fighting with police or something like that. You know, someone that people will believe that this guy did something horrible. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be just somebody talking about the government on the internet the first time.
Although to me, that kind of refutes your earlier point that they'll do it on the low and not let people know about it. I think if they're doing it like that, their motivation will be to set a precedent. So I don't think they try to keep it secret.
Well, I will say I think that they're going to drone an American citizen in America in the next 3 to 5 years. That's the only solid prediction I have that's not a joke in any of this.
Well,
you think that's completely out of the park there, Miles, or what?
First of all, the precedent has been set. I mean, that guy, I can't remember his name, but he was an American citizen who got grown in Yemen.
Yeah.
And no one says that he wasn't a heinous guy. But the point I was trying to make is, why bother with droning someone when you can covertly assassinate someone in like 1,000 different ways, or you can go arrest that person, plant some, I don't know, drugs on him or something, and then haul him off and do rotten things to them that way. Yeah, after forfeiture and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, that's why at the end of our Guns and Weed movie, Neiman and I say if we're ever found dead of a drug overdose or car crash or an apparent suicide, there was a government agency behind it. You know, 27 years ago, I was a heroin addict, so it wouldn't. I will never use heroin again, but if I were found dead with a needle in my arm of heroin, there are a lot of people who'd say, well, you know, once a junkie, always a junkie. He fell off the wagon. That's what happens.
Naturally. Yeah.
Or
that is a really good point.
With my gun. You know, they'd shoot me in the head with my gun and type some suicide note on my computer or something. Or, you know,
Have enough power over us to do that kind of stuff.
They'd come into my house, hold me down, put my gun to my head, kill me, put it in my hand, and then jump on my Facebook account and say, fuck you, goodbye, good, cruel world or something.
Yeah, I was always a big fan of that, you know, crudely scrawled suicide note, goodbye, cruel world, and cruel is spelled wrong.
Yeah, there's one in that movie, The Shield, where they're hassling some drug dealer to get information about him about someone else, and they make him write life sucks, S-U-X, and then put it in his pocket and threaten to throw him out the window and say, either tell us what you want to know or you're going to die a very bad speller.
Never saw that one.
Here's another thing. Part of why the government, at least the Obama administration, has moved more towards drone strikes and night raids than, you know, capturing people and torturing them is because sometimes for them it's just easier. You know, they just pull the trigger on a drone and then that's it. That's the end of the story. They don't have to deal with an ACLU coming in. They don't have to deal with a lawsuit. They don't have to deal with people complaining about people being tortured. End of story right there. You pulled the drone trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but anyway, the reason why I was calling was I was wondering if you guys ever looked into the Trivium.
Tritium?
The Trivium.
What's that?
Trivium. It's a thought process.
No.
Where basically you take in information through your senses, you think about it, you process the information, process out all fallacies and contradictions, and only then you share it with other people.
We don't do that. We just say that's too logical for the fiends, man.
I don't know. It sounds worthwhile, it sounds like a lot of mental effort. But I think that's an important point.
Well,
so give us an example of how you use that in your daily life. Is that basically a way you try to live your life, Miles?
Well, yes, and I only learned it a little while ago, but it's starting to reach the point where it's almost automatic. I mean. I know I already did this before, but I mean, I just look at the news, the regular mainstream news, I should stress, and I just think, you know, who are they trying to fool with this? I mean, fallacy, 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 contradiction, fallacy. Once you start thinking like this, it's like you can't help but think like this.
That's a very good point. It's a good habit to have, and maybe that's what schools, if they are to exist in LibPair, that should be their main focus then, is to teach people how to think, not what to think about.
There's also a metal band from Orlando, Florida called Trivium.
Which is a nice bit of trivia.
Yep. Well, cool, Miles. Thanks for coming on. I don't think we said anything useful here today, but I had fun. And you can call
it. I thought it was very
man.
Useful. Thank you very much.
Well, he did.
Miles.
He said things were useful. I didn't. Still there, Miles?
It's always about you.
Government-free baklava from Mandrake.
Well,
how about trying staple sweets? Government.
We're off the air. We're off the air. By the way,
I mean, I shouldn't even exist.
Well, I mean.
Let's take a little break.
Epistemologically speaking, who should? I mean, the chances that any of us would are slim to none.
Well, yeah. But,
of course, some of the most evil people out there. Hi, Nima.
Definitely. What's up, Michael Dubb?
This is Freedom Fiends Live. I'm good. If people want to call in, our live studio number is 307-215-5171. Or Skype to the username KittyFeet1. We tried to get we wanted to get the phone number 307 Jenkum, but it was not available, unfortunately.
We're going to keep trying for it, though. Jenkum is a high goal of ours.
I know. Because it kind of sums up everything that's wrong with the government.
The government. Well, it's people. And I'm upset right now about people who are making me pay them money that I don't feel I should pay them. I'm talking, of course, it is April 15th, and my taxes
you're getting mugged?
Due tomorrow. Getting mugged. Literally. Yeah, yeah. If I don't cut this check and pay these folks part of my hard-earned labor, they're gonna come at me, man. So and you pay your I don't have yet? The means to defend
did
myself.
It? Did you do it yet?
Actually, as I am complaining about taxes, my wife is doing them right now.
Well, that's a nice division of labor. How does she like that?
It is.
Let's get her on here.
Wife, how do you like paying taxes? She says, "I love it."
I love it. I love paying I love this it. Hate.
Please do not drone me.
Is she on Compliacin?
Yeah, I decided to put my wife on Compliacin for other reasons than the government.
For paying the taxes.
It works.
You know, I missed. What did she say?
You can't cuss on live radio, honey.
She just did.
She said, "I love you."
Ah. Well, that can be loving. What she mentioned doing
it sure.
You know,
can.
I missed a big chance when I interviewed. We'll get back to taxes, but I missed a big chance when I interviewed Jody Emery because, like everybody else that I've interviewed on the Gumbo, I've talked extensively about sex and BDSM with, and I was like, I am not going to ask a woman whose husband is in jail about her sex life. I'm just not going to do it. And
I think you erred in favor of the right side there. That was probably a good choice on your part.
But, you know, then I watched this movie with – call her hold. Then I watched this movie about her and her husband, and, like, she said in it, like, yeah, I basically met him because I wanted to find and marry a great older man and do his bidding and help him out. And there's, like, scenes in there where she's, like – on her knees, like being a good 50s housewife, like buffing his shoes. And I'm like, okay, I should have asked her about that. But anyway.
You should have. Yeah.
Who's on the phone here? We got a caller. You're going to talk about taxes?
Hey.
Who is it?
Hey, this is Ben from Bad Quaker.
Hey, Ben. What's up? Did you pay your taxes yet?
Yeah. You know, I was just reading on the internet that Michael liked to be called Mikey Mike. Is that a trend that's starting to catch on?
Oh, that's where we're going.
Mikey Mike?
So, Ben, what do you do for a living?
Hold on. No. We can't drop the Mikey Mike.
Ben, don't you
get a government... Is that your nickname?
Don't you get a government pension? Isn't that what you do for a living? From working...
Wow, this is getting heated. You're trying to start some more pod beef right now.
I love pod beef, man. Stefan and I had so much pod beef. And then, like... We're it's all good. I emailed with him yesterday and it was funny. He emailed me about something. So what do you do for a living there, Ben Quaker?
I am retired making money off of the drones that are blowing up people in foreign countries.
Yeah, you worked for aerospace. Did you work for a military contractor?
I did. I worked for one of the major ones. So I work for General Electric Aircraft Engines.
Oh, they're part of the government. So I have a question. Yikes. I want some insider information here that you've probably signed an NDA and can't talk about. But I heard that what happened at Area 51, like, you know, people say, oh, there are UFOs landed and stuff. That what really happened was that Area 51 was for testing experimental aircraft that eventually led to the drone 50 years later. And people thought they were UFOs because they were seeing lights in the sky do things and behave in ways that known aircraft could not do. And the government just either started the rumor that it was UFOs or let people spread that because it covered what they were really doing, which was developing the drone. Is that true? Did that come from Area 51?
I have no absolute knowledge on it, but that has always been kind of my assumption. That and the Aurora Project. Are you familiar with the Aurora Project?
No.
What's the Aurora Project?
It was kind of like the grandfather of that really super secret space plane that's flying around us right now that nobody seems to be talking about or knowing about. But NASA is totally not denying.
Oh, it's like the really high-level drone. It's like a satellite that can move or something, basically, right?
Oh, I'd like more info on that. What's that? What's it called and what is it doing?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what the current name of the one that's up there right now is. All I've heard it referred to as space plane, but essentially it's an unmanned, like the next generation.
It's the space shuttle that's a drone, basically. I'm looking.
Yeah.
There's a Wikipedia article.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is it weaponized?
Of course.
We're told it's not, you know.
Yeah.
It's listening to the Freedom Fiends right now, though.
Probably.
it's grooving to some hip hop by Nima and I.
It likes to hear about itself because it's a drone.
Yeah, we're droning on about the drones. You know, Okay, I don't want to go off on it. I don't want to go off on a tangent. I will. Ass sunscreen, which is what we call Cass Sunstein. Obama. He's kind of like Obama's Karl Rove. You know, he's a high level czar that, what is he, the czar of everything? No, the regulatory czar. He wrote this article about, like, back when he worked for Bush, he wrote this article about, like, what to do about the internet. And he wrote a book called The Problem with Free Speech and Democracy. And in this PDF that is linked on Freedom Fiends that you can download, he talked about various methods of quashing the internet and free speech to protect the government. And, you know, one of the things he said was having paid bloggers from the government, like going into where people are talking about things the government don't like and offering counter opinions. And he said, but one problem with that is that those people could start to believe the counter opinions. So I'm wondering, like, I think they just have computers listen to everything on LRN.fm, because if they actually had a person listen to it, they might start to make sense to them.
If you follow the chat very much over at Reddit, it's real quick. It's really easy to start to believe that some of those people are plants, because some of the things they say are just amazing.
Well, Reddit's just a cross-section of the internet. I mean, it's a popular site where things can go viral easily, which is why they would want to have some plants there. What do you speak of in particular? Give me an example.
Oh, my. I've tried to hang out in the anarcho-capitalist area at Reddit, and there's some good people over there. Don't get me wrong or anything, but there's some of them that are making arguments and asking questions that are like, you know, how much do you get paid to say that? That is just no normal person would even think of that.
I actually got into an argument with what I think is one of those people the other day. There's a site on Facebook called We Survived Bush, You'll Survive Obama.
That's disgusting.
I know. And it has like 100,000 followers. And I posted something on there that was, you know, basically saying there's no difference between Bush and Obama. They're two sides of the same status coin. And this, the moderator of the site started arguing with me and making all these logical fallacies. And I was like, oh, that's the red herring. Oh, that's this, that's that. And, you know, finally said, like linked that Cass Sunstein article and told him, you know, said, everybody go check out this page of this article. I think we're dealing with one of these people that Cass Sunstein is talking about hiring here. And the person, like, a couple of my friends piled on and joined me, and it did not get deleted. It never got it didn't get blocked. The guy just went away, and someone's like, "You won," and I'm like, "No, he didn't leave. He's over. He's out like filing a report on me with the DHS.
he's taking his lunch break, Michael."
Yeah. Well, he never came back or deleted or anything though, so I think he did just report me. Yeah.
There's our
We're music. On that break. You want to hang out with us, Ben, or what's up?
I got to record a podcast. I just wanted to call and hassle you guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Worms.
Take care.
Worms.
Since it's for
half a bill or something, you know.
Yeah.
They could theoretically do it.
Well, we could be getting there. The other day we had 18 gigs of downloads on the Fiends, a record-setting day. And the same day we had 11 gigs of downloads on the Anarchy Gumballs, which is pretty amazing for a podcast that's been around for 2 weeks. If I must say so myself.
It is, man. Good job there. Worms. Building your freedom empire. Your world within a world. Hey!
We got a caller, which is good, because I ain't got nothing to say. Who's this who's this caller we got here? We got a caller. Who is it? Hello, caller. You're on caller? The air. Hello?
Whoa. Is it the central Kevin. Scrutinizer?
Kevin. What's up?
Who's there, man?
It's Michael Dean. Who's this?
This is Kevin. Kevin from Marblehead.
You know you're on the air, right?
I think I do, but okay. I think there's an echo. I'm going to have to turn the live feed off. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. I didn't know because it's a name that I recognize from my contacts, and I was like, this might just be a friend of mine calling me, and he might be like, hey, dude, let's go, you know, and say something that he wouldn't want to say. I don't know. Are you there, Kevin? Have you turned on?
I'm here. How are you guys doing?
Good. What do you got to say?
Doing good, man. What's up?
Well, I've got, I think, some status confessions. Is this 1-800-STATUS-CONFESSIONS?
Yes, my son. What have you done?
Yeah. Well, so here's something I want to throw out to you guys. So lately I have been out and about supporting the legalization and taxation of cannabis.
Ooh. I'll let you buy.
Why?
I'll let you buy.
Why do you want to tax cannabis?
Well, I don't really want to tax it.
Because he thinks that's how to get it legalized, which probably is true.
Exactly.
It's probably true.
Yeah, so it would be lesser two evils, right?
I'm not gonna bash anyone for doing that, you know. Mark Emery's my new hero, and he did that. He voluntarily paid taxes on it when it was illegal. So
I'm not going to bash you either, but I'm curious. Are you trying to educate your fellow protesters and your fellow people in the movement that in the end, the way we really want it to be is no taxation, no regulation, and legalization?
Yeah, that should be the ultimate goal, and that's where you get into all types of heated debates. There's a classic paper or thing that ran our local newspaper here on many people just saying, you know, forget the bill, we don't want this, we want zero taxes at all. And you know, I think that's of course a fair thing to aim for, but I just don't think it's going to get us there today. You know, you need something to bring into the state, unfortunately, to get them to cut off the feds. You know, so it's kind of decentralizing the power at the Fed and bringing it back home, and then hopefully, eventually, you bring it right down to the people. Just get the state right out of it as well.
I definitely see where you're coming from, but I guess here's my thing: is in situations where you have a sort of partial legality or a mixed system, the state inevitably just keeps on adding more and more regulations. Like in Colorado with the dispensaries, they make so many hoops you have to jump through that in the end, you still end up with a black market in pot.
You still have
people that sell it without the approval of the government.
I think Neem and I differ on this. I think it's I'm probably more behind you than Neem is on this. I don't know. I mean, I live in a state where guns are way more legal than they were in California, but they're still regulated and taxed. But I like living here more than I like living there. You know, if I smoke pot, I'd rather live in Colorado than in Wyoming. And I 99% of what Neem and I talk about 24/7 is, you know, get the state entirely out of things. But I'm for, you know, things working a little better than they did before. Like, I'd rather live in America than North Korea. I'm freer here than I would be there. There's degrees of freedom. I mean, we say there's no such thing as half free, but we're kind of talking about the goal. And I will spend every ounce of energy I have trying to educate people why the goal is no state, but I'm into throwing away some stupid laws for now. If drugs were legalized and taxed tomorrow, I think the world would be a better place than it is right now, where people are killed for having drugs.
No, I get it. And I'm with you guys. I'm with both you guys. I just want to make sure that we keep our eyes on the prize. I think there's a danger in getting to a place where we're like, oh, okay, well, now I can go buy pot at Walmart. I'm going to stop fighting for freedom. I just want to make sure that doesn't happen.
And really, you know, the thing is, we've passed the point of that it could have been taken care of the way the founders intended, which was hassle doctrine. You know, the Second Amendment, the Second Amendment is clearly basically saying if someone messes with you, you should be able to shoot them. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't have had flags that said liberty or death. They wouldn't have had things that say, you know, the blood of tyrants, et cetera. But we passed a point of that, and I'm not advocating violence. I'm just saying, like, the point has been passed probably around the time of FDR of when people could have done that, or maybe sooner, or maybe the Whiskey Rebellion, if you want to take it back to drugs and taxation. You know, to the point now where it's like they don't care how many guns you got because they got drones. Drone Trump's gun.
Well, tell us about this. Tell us a little bit about the bill. And do you co-sign it? Do you think it's good? Is it just a little bit of taxation, or what's the deal with it?
Where are you, too? What
I
state?
Mean, we're in Massachusetts, so this I didn't put the bill forward. I just spoke out on terms of the benefits for medicinal use and cancer and you know, the research that I've stumbled into.
I don't think it'll pass in Massachusetts. They're just too statist, man.
Yeah, you know, I think we might get medical this year, but I don't think it's not going to be the Colorado event where they're attempting to get a full-blown legalization there. But it's good to hear, you know, so it's actually, I think it's a great topic for the general libertarian theme here is if the goal is anarcho-capitalism, how do you get there from here? Can you actually do that in a non-aggressive way? Or do you have to go through some form of libertarianism first?
Hey, hang on a sec. Let me put this other guy on hold. This is, oops, damn it. I declined it. If that's
going to defriend you now, man. If that was
my friend Matt Anger calling, which I think it was based on the error code, he should call back during the break because I really want to get him on here. He's the guy that taught me about guns, man. He's the first guy that taught me guns are good. All right, go on.
Yeah. So, what's your take? Is the Larkin Rose approach of like, you know, vote for Mitt Romney so you can destroy the system faster?
Is that his take?
Rise from the ashes, or is there some type of transition path that makes sense?
Did he say that? Did he?
He's got something on one of his blogs that he.
Although you know, I think some of what he says is kind of tongue in cheek too.
Probably, yeah, yeah. I mean, I actually think voting for Mitt is an aggressive act. The guy's openly for war.
I agree.
So that's,
Larkin's one of the few people besides us out there in this movement who has a sense of humor. One of the few people that makes media that makes me laugh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's certainly a hilarious position.
Well, see, here's how I think of it. I think I'll take whatever I can get. You know, every freedom, we got to grab it. Whether it's pushing the whole button to end the state, if that was available now, I'd push it. Or if there's pushing a button to where part of the drug war will die, I'll push that button as well.
Yeah.
So whatever is in there, when we can tear down freedom, build up freedom and tear down tyranny, whether it's through half measures or whole measures, I think we should be taking it, because it's kind of like football, right? I'll take getting a first down 3-4 yards at a time, but I'll also take a Hail Mary to the end zone.
Smrows, arms backwards.
Nice. I love how people take the fiend speak and they mutate it and turn it into new things. Awesome.
That's us, DNA people. We love mutations.
Beautiful. Hey, thank you so much for calling.
Good hearing from you guys. Take care. Great movie, by the way.
Thanks, man. Oh, appreciate it. Michael, I'm going to take a little break.
Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedom.com.
Nima Vidati.
Yes, Michael W. Dean.
So what did you think of this review of the Guns and Weed movie in Inc. 19 magazine?
I liked it, for the most part. I liked how they thought it was fun. They picked up on the sense of humor, thought it was entertaining, which was, you know, at least half of the goal. Yeah. So I dug that. I think we do prove our points more than reviews I've read like this that just say we don't provide much substance in it. I thought there was, at least from my point of view, a nice set of arguments against government intervention in our personal lives.
Yeah. Yeah. So, although they said you didn't rap well, which I took exception to.
Yeah, well, it was kind of a hard nut to crack because I was trying to be understandable by everybody, so I toned down, you know, some of the things a little bit and tried to make it more accessible. So it's, I guess you can't please everybody, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they also said you were a large man from India, which you're neither.
A large South Asian man. Yeah, yeah. At least they're funny, so
well,
I'll take
that
it.
Means that means they think your acting's good, because that means that they think Johnny Patel was real. They think you are Indian, which someone else thought too. That should know better. Who was it? Claire Wolfe thought you're from India.
Yeah, yeah. Oh well.
Yeah.
I guess Persians and Indians are both Aryans. So
my Aryan
and my wife's German, so we've got a nice little Aryan family here.
I thought she was Polish.
She's Polish and German.
Yeah, that's the best kind.
There you go.
Yeah. Yep.
Worms.
Yep. So they liked it. They said it bounced along like a Saturday Night Live skit that admits it lights up.
And that's another thing I like, because when we were thinking about making the Guns and Weed movie, we both decided it'd be best if it was short little segments instead of one long narrative. Wanted to be catchy, like a bunch of little YouTube videos in one bigger video.
They also complimented our low budget filmmaking, which I like. They said, what little funds were spent show what you can do these days with a cheap camcorder and open source editing suite, which we actually used Premiere, which is not open source, but I liked what they said.
Yeah, I like what they said too. Yeah.
I don't
mind. They said the effects were kind of common, but never cheesy. So
yeah,
fair enough.
They liked it. They liked it. No, they said it was cheesy, but good.
Oh, that's it. Because cheesy is good, man. I love me some high school nachos and some jalapenos.
Well, think about some of the best stuff that was on Saturday Night Live was those little movies by... We got a caller.
Fun with real audio. Yeah. Caller!
Who's calling?
Hey, Mike. Hey, Nima. This is Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Which Sean?
Sean, the one that won the calendar and sent you the silver.
Thank you for the silver.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
You got
How do you like
got
the calendar, Sean?
Oh, I love it. It's very great quality. I love the pictures.
Cool. You got me hooked, man. I got that silver. I didn't have any. I was like, wow. And I went out and spent like $115 buying more silver the next day.
I infected.
Feels good in your hand, doesn't it?
You did.
Yeah, it does.
You know,
yeah, Ernie Hancock got me hooked on it. And, you know, I didn't have any cash, and I really appreciated this calendar. And I figured I'd send you guys a little something.
Thanks, man. Yeah, when I was a kid, 1964, I was born. That was the last year that U.S. money had any silver in it. And
yeah.
I remember being like 5 or 6 years old, and I'd get a dime in change that was from 64 or earlier. And my dad or my grandpa or uncle would say, you should save that. It's made of silver. And I'd be like, no, I want to buy candy. Wish I'd listened to them. If I'd saved every silver dime I got in change between the ages of 5 and 15, I could probably buy my house now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yep. I remember growing up, it always just seemed like a fact of life that prices get higher, and I never really understood why, but I remember the way I noticed it was on payphones, because I'm not too old, but I'm old enough to remember payphones, and every few years, the price seemed to go up on it, and I was like, oh, that's just how money works. It always gets more expensive for things.
Yeah, I see candy bars in the store, and I can't believe they're like $1.15. It's like, I used to buy them for 10 cents.
I know.
Yeah, not only that, but the quality's going down, you'll notice. The chocolate in, like, Twix and stuff does not taste the same.
They're making them smaller, too. A lot of things are getting smaller, too, like cereal boxes are, like, 2 ounces less cereal than they used to be.
Yep.
So what's new, man? What you got for us today?
Hey, I was listening to you guys talk about unions on the show last week.
Yeah.
And you ever heard of prevailing wage?
No.
I'm a non-union electrician.
Hmm.
But when the contractor I work for does like a government job, a school or something like that, they have to pay me pretty close to union wages by law.
So you can't even use price as a bargaining tool in those situations.
Yeah. Like I make $27 an hour, which I think is a decent wage.
It's a decent wage.
Yeah. That's more than a good wage.
It's more than I make.
But one of the last, you know, prevailing wage jobs I was on, I was making $42 an hour.
Wow. So are you saying this is a good idea? You think this is...
No, what I'm saying is, as a struggling, you know, family guy, I mean, wow, it's great. But as somebody who's forced to pay taxes...
Yeah.
I mean, I know. I don't understand it, you know?
I know. There's a big newspaper debate in my area of they're revamping the public high school here and spending millions of dollars to do it. And they hired some people from Colorado because they were cheaper and would do as good of a job. And the local politicians got involved and said, no, we have to hire people from this area and pay more.
That's crazy.
I also feel like the thing about the prevailing wages is then you can't use that as a negotiation tool, because I feel like you, as a non-union guy, you bring that to the table on a job. You can say, hey, I'll work for you. I won't have to put you through all the ringer that you have to go through whenever you hire a union guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm reading like the Wikipedia page on prevailing wages, and it says they're an important element in ensuring that public construction projects do not destabilize the local construction industry.
Who wrote that, I wonder?
Lefties at Wikipedia. I seem to remember learning that prevailing wages started as a racist thing because contractors were hiring, poor blacks and poor Mexicans who do the job for a lot cheaper. And so the government came out with these prevailing wage laws and said, no, can't do that anymore. We got to hire white guys who will work for the prevailing wage. So they upped the wage.
Maybe. I think it was union protectionism.
A lot of things started racist. Gun laws started out of racism. Marriage laws started out of racism.
Yep.
I think it was Walter Williams. Google him and prevailing wages. I think he wrote a nice article for it. He's writes on LouRockwell.com sometimes, and I think he's a professor maybe at George Mason University. So I think that's where he read that. He talks about race issues and how the government – all these things that the government does to supposedly help poor people, like prevailing wages, minimum wages, welfare, they end up hurting people instead of helping them. And not only that, but they have to steal money to hurt us more with it.
Yeah, I know my bosses, push us a lot harder. You're making more money, so you got to work a lot harder and quicker.
Yeah.
Right.
I also wanted to mention, I saw Gore about 22 years ago.
Where'd you see him?
I saw him in a little place in Salisbury, Mass. And at the time, I had, you know, long blonde hair down my back. I walked out of that show. My hair was pink from all the fake blood. And it was pink for three nice. Days. It drove my parents nuts.
How many people were at that show?
Oh, gee, I don't know. It was before I stopped drinking, so I don't really remember.
They play theaters now to like 1,200 people, and sell out everywhere they play. My band Bomb played with them in like 1987 in North Carolina in Raleigh, and there were more people on stage when Gwar played than there were in the audience.
Yeah, I had never heard of them before, but they put on a great show.
Yep.
I guess the only thing I really heard of him when I was younger was seeing him on Beavis and Butthead. And Beavis and Butthead would always go wild whenever Gwar came on.
Band.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
All right, guys. Nice. Well, like I said, I just wanted to thank you for the calendar, and it's awesome.
Cool, man. Worms.
Hey, we appreciate that, man. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the silver.
All right, later.
Yep.
All right. Peace.
Worms. So, Nima, we got about 2 minutes here. What do you got, man? What do you got?
2 minutes. What do we want to wrap it up with? Okay. There was this I wanted to talk about. The whole Trayvon Martin thing. Scott Horton kind of blew my mind when he said this. He says, I believe Trayvon Martin had the right to stand his ground and shoot George Zimmerman. You know, turning that whole thing on its head, since people are saying these stand your ground laws are stupid and all the lefties are trying to use it to attack gun rights.
I like his take on it, and I agree if it went down the way a lot of people are saying. You know,
that's true, and we'll never know, but here's the thing, and this got me thinking. You know, I've been reading a lot of the L. Neil Smith graphic novels and stuff, and all the societies, the quote-unquote libpairs, or I guess we call them libpair societies, everybody's armed, even the kids. And so I think if we lived in a free society, Trayvon Martin would be as armed, and he'd probably be open carrying. George Zimmerman probably would have been open carrying too, and they would have just hat tip. I don't think it would have come to what it came to. Just my opinion.
You've been reading L. Neil Smith, which I remember there's like an 8-year-old kid in there who's got a .22 rifle and he's walking around with it. And he's peaceful.
Yeah, he's looking for ammo. Yeah, peaceful.
Exactly.
An armed society is a polite society. And it's not polite to murder people.
It is very impolite to murder people.
Very, very impolite.
Freedom Fiends Live, another successful, wonderful weekly show, and we are out.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at prison.